Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is May 29, I think?
28th.
Oh.
It's June already. I don't understand.
It's June. Memorial Day. I mean, it wasn't nothing going on, but it came and went.
We've been in lockdown for a quarter, damn near.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've been in shutdown for a whole quarter. That's crazy.
And I actually watched Cuomo today. I don't really watch him too much. Not because I don't like him. It just becomes too much for me. But I actually watched today, and he didn't mention anything about lifting. I know he's been kind of been, you know, hinting that it might be like a slow, lifting of some stuff. But today he didn't mention anything about that. So I don't.
I know. I feel like yesterday, if I saw, because I don't watch him every day anymore either. But mm-hmm. I feel like yesterday I was flipping channels and I flipped past New York One, and they said something about how New York City would absolutely be the last area in the state to reopen. And I know that the state put out a guideline a while ago. I have to read it. They put out a guideline of like what the phases of reopening would look like.
Okay.
That I have to take a look at. So, I mean, there's definitely the conversation, but even still, I think it's going to be very much like it was before we went under official shutdown, which is going to be like a lot of social distancing, obviously a lot of I think we're going to see caps on public gatherings until next year. You know, I don't think that's going away. I think it's still not like nothing's going back to normal.
No.
I think like restaurants are going to have a limit. Restaurants and grocery stores are going to have a limit to how many people can be in there. I'm pretty sure. And what I'm really curious about is what this means for, brick and mortar retailers, like, you know, the Gap and shit like that. Like, are they going to be able to, what's that look like? So, yeah.
Yeah. I know there's an Indian restaurant up the hill from me. And I walked past them last night and they had some people sitting outside, but you can't sit as a couple. So in other words, you could sit there, you know, one chair and then like 6 feet away to on either
another
side.
Another chair.
There's another person. Yeah, but you can't. It wasn't like you can like, yo, let's all go get something
right
to eat.
Right. But then the question is like, if you can only fill your space by a certain capacity, you're not making enough for it to make sense for you to be open with staff.
That's
you
real.
Know what I mean? So
that's
it's like,
real.
Sean, I know you got some insight on that.
Yeah. No, it makes no sense because your margins are already thin, right? Like, at a best-case scenario, a restaurant is running on an incredibly thin margin. Mm-hmm. You know, any hiccup can kind of impact them in a negative way. So, you know, the only way you can have less seating, and you can't make that up by volume, is that you're now going to have to increase your price.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only, you know, you're going to have to charge for things that maybe you didn't charge for before. You're going to have to supplement that income because at the end of the day, the first is here and the rents due, motherfucker.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, so.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's tough. I mean, we've talked about it before on the show, but like I said, you know, I'm fearful that it's going to be a lot of small businesses. It's very interesting because on one side, you know, places, you know, the mom and poppy stuff, the barbershops, the beauty salons, the nail salons, the takeout joints have been open. They just can't sit down in there. But, you know, some of the other kind of smaller businesses, the cleaners, I don't know if the cleaners have been open, actually. I don't think they have.
I don't think dry cleaners. Matter of fact, I'm concerned because I'm like, if my dry cleaner don't open back up, what's going to happen to my clothes?
My cleaners, I actually just noticed today, they have Wednesday and Saturday hours.
Okay.
So, you know, people will come in, do their little drop-offs, and then come back when they open up. They have a very specific time frame. I think it's like 12 to 3 or something like that. Or,
okay.
You know,
come
some sort of weird hours where you can come get your stuff and do your drop-off.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, okay. But stuff like that, it's like on one side, you know, when this first happened, I was definitely of the mindset like, damn, they all going to be gone. And I think some of them will catch L's.
Yeah.
But the other side of it is like, and I think we might have mentioned this on the show too before. It's like, okay, so if the landlords of these places kicks them out, who's coming in?
They got
in?
Nobody else to replace them, yeah.
Exactly. So it's like, yo, we might as well work out some, Earl, because
I mean, that's true.
Now I just got an empty space, and I have no idea when someone else will come in and fill this thing. So
that's true, but New York, I don't know with New York landlords, because how many times have we seen in Harlem or other places where they did kick a restaurant out and that shit stayed empty for years only to become like a 99 cent store or something
like that. So we'll see. Oh, that is one thing that Cuomo said today. He didn't, which was interesting. He said what he talked about today, what Chris Rock and Rosie Perez are on today with him. He did it from Brooklyn. So he was talking a little bit about, you know, their thing was basically like telling everybody, like, please keep wearing your mask. Like,
Throwing
people out with no mask on. And Rosie and Chris were like, look, like, you know, you got to keep wearing your mask. Like, don't, like, get slack and lackadaisical on this. The virus is still here and there might be another uptick and we don't want people to get sick and that type of thing. And then Cuomo said something really interesting, which is like, he talked about how, you know, there was so much pork on the bill.
Yeah.
You know, certain states got a lot of money. New York State got like less money per person than like, I think it was like Hawaii and some of the other ones. And then he talked about what this kind of does is what it puts in danger is, okay, so a lot of these businesses got this huge influx of cash that because they're not, you know, operating, right?
Right.
But now the fear is now, so they got this huge influx of cash, and now they might say, like, yo, right, we got this extra money.
Let's just shut down and
lay off a whole bunch of people because we don't need them.
Right.
And we got a bunch of money to, like, in our coffers that we didn't have before. So he was like,
hold on. I'm sorry. Maybe I missed it. Where were they getting money from?
From the bill that the government passed.
But wasn't the bill for. Wasn't the condition of the bill that you get the money and you not lay off there?
Yeah.
Well, the way he presented it was like,
yeah.
Go ahead.
There are a ton of stipulations that come with that money. Now, you may have. Let me just say this: there are lots of loopholes within the bill that they passed.
Mm-hmm.
And there are ways that you can work around it. And I think we've kind of talked about this. But if you're getting PPP loans, which are a paycheck protection program, if you're getting those loans, you absolutely have stipulations about the amount of staff that you have to retain. You don't have to retain the same people, but you do have to retain a specific number, almost like a percentage of your staff. So basically, you can't say... you can't, you know, get a loan based on having 20 employees and then say, I'm now going to have five. I'm just going to pay them this much. Exactly.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
You also can't use that as a way to, you can only use 25% of that is only allotted for your overhead. Basically your rent, some acceptable utilities, things of that nature. Okay. It is, while we have seen the obvious cases of fraud.
Yeah, it's a scam shit. Yeah, yeah.
And there are, again, I'm prefacing this, there are a shit ton of loopholes here.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get over a certain amount, you are absolutely going to be on the radar of the federal government, and they are absolutely going to come in and ask for your paperwork.
Reputable
people have been basically having identified accounts for that money.
Okay.
So there's no commingling. You can have an easy direct. Listen, the last thing you want is the federal government having having access to all of your accounts.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, you
don't need to raise any more, you know, red flags
have
already raised.
No doubt.
So if you have it in a single account, it's much more, it's not just easy for that, but it's also easy for you to track. It's an easy way to track. Once you start to co-mingle the funds, shit gets messy. But yes, there are absolute stipulations to that. There is not a big bundle of money that you're going to get for people to stay home. It's not going to work like that.
Okay, cool. So maybe I misunderstood what he was saying.
But in fairness, what he is saying is the issue that you're going to have is you also have a very finite time to spend that money.
Oh, so I didn't know that.
Yes. You have a very specific window to spend that money. That money has to be spent and accounted for during a certain period of time. And if you look, I think I might have sent you guys the Times article that spoke to several restaurateurs that have been asking and lobbying for Congress to extend that portion of the bill. Because what's happening is you get this money, but the country hasn't opened up yet. So let's just say for the sake of numbers, you received your money May 1st.
Okay.
Right? And now you have 8 weeks to spend that money.
Yeah, but ain't nobody, the country ain't open.
The country ain't open, right? So, yes, you've been able to pay your rent. You've been able to keep those people employed. But now, let's just say the country opens and you're in week 6. By the time you've exhausted those resources and those funds by week 8, what happens to you in week 10?
Yeah.
Because no one's coming to your restaurant at full capacity before.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
So they're saying you're giving us this money, but it is really not helping us because it is supposed to extend to when we open up.
Yeah.
And gives us some breathing room. You're not giving people breathing room, ultimately. Okay. So that's my sidebar.
That was the financial advisor portion.
from our resident financial advisor, security expert, logistics expert,
etc.
The views here. The views.
You know what I'm saying? Small business expert, etc. I have, while we're talking about shutdown and reopening, I had a question, Jeffrey, that I told Sean I wanted to ask before we started taping, because we really haven't addressed this. You know, we talked a lot about how we're handling shutdown, but I wanted to ask Sean how the kids were handling shutdown, because we talked about small kids at one point, but I read a study that teenagers and young adults are really having a hard time with the loss of their social aspect. Which actually also concerns me for young kids too, because this is an important foundation for them, like learning how to relate to other people. Like, the socialization aspect is important for them developmentally, but in terms of older children, young adults, like, they, it's such a part of them, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. their friends and their... So, Sean, how are Jordan and Justin doing?
Justin, I'm not 100% sure of. He has gone out a couple of times. So he gets out of the house. He has his license. So he can, move around a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we where we live. You know, there's a huge trail. So, like, literally goes out and takes these, you know, long walks. Like, he goes all up in the trails. And I guess that's his kind of downtime, his kind of disconnect time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. And because, you know, he does have a job and, you know, he's survived another round of layoffs or whatever, and he's still employed.
Yeah.
He still has access to peers.
Right.
whether it's a Zoom call or whether it's this or whether it's that. I think he has been able to deal with this a little bit more, deal with this better than maybe some other kids that are sort of in his position. And again, I also think space is a big part of that. I think, you know, he's ultimately down in the basement.
Yeah, he has an enormous amount of space. Yeah,
yeah, he's kind of in his zone, and he's not on top of folks. So, but Jordan has taken this a little tougher, and she has ebbs and flows,
mm-hmm.
Like most 17-year-old kids.
Yeah.
You know, there's some really good days, and then there's some really bad days.
Yeah.
And there are some days where I get it. You know, we let her go with a couple of her friends. I think it was like maybe four friends. And they went to walk around in a park.
Okay.
There's a park. So I was like, you know what? You can walk down there. It's not that far from the house. Take a walk down to the park. You know, walk around. They have their mask on. And look, I know they're talking and they're not, it is what it is.
Yeah, we're going to do. You know what I'm saying?
At this point. I also understood that I felt like that might have broken her, not letting her do that.
Right.
Might have done more harm
to make us sit in the house. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so, you know, we started to have discussions and I can feel the needle moving now. Now it's right. kind of like, so if the pool is open,
right, and like right. three,
so yes. I'm constantly sending her to Jordan face, like, nah, like, chill, fuck it.
Yeah, right.
You know, but she, you know, we had a discussion the other day. I was just, look, you know, you have to stand and understand your parents' position. You have to understand other people's parents' position. I get it. You guys are 16, 17 years old, but you're not just going to be able to do everything you want to do.
Yeah, right. It ain't going, like Matt said earlier, everything's not going back to how it was. Yeah.
Right, right.
So she definitely has her rougher days. But, you know, obviously with the technology and FaceTime and all of the yeah. things, these kids, it's like seven of them on a fucking phone.
Right.
They in the kitchen, they cooking together.
Yeah.
Right, talking right,
to
right.
so-and-so. So she's not disconnected.
Right.
In that way, I think the drive-by that they did for her birthday, you know, really kind of lifted her spirits. And mm-hmm. I think we got to do another one for one of her friends. They're doing another drive-by. So okay.
Yeah, the drive-by things have been big.
This is starting to become a thing. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's interesting. I took, like, my girl, for example, her daughter's same age, 17.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, she's a different breed in that. Like, she hasn't been outside the house for maybe, like, three or four times. And isn't tripping. She's right. like, I'm good. Again, it's a lot of FaceTime and all that stuff. And she dances. Like,
they're in Rochdale, though, right?
No. She's in Yonkers.
Oh, okay.
My aunt's in Rochdale. But, so she dances and stuff too. So, like, you know, she does like dance classes on Zoom. So there's a lot of interaction with people from her dance class and her friends and stuff like that. But I've talked to a couple other people too, like my friend Kia and a couple other people who all have kids around that age, same right. kind of age, at, you know, 14 or 17 zone. And I guess it's not even a real service for people, but a lot of what I'm hearing is a lot of those kids aren't going out.
Well, you know what I think?
They're kind
I
of
think,
like staying in the house and shit a lot, you know?
But I do think for some, aside from school, a lot of their socialization was happening on the internet anyway. They were doing, you know, snaps yeah. and Snapchat and all that other good shit. So I guess maybe that hasn't, and gaming together and all of that. Yeah, like, I know Greg's son, I'm not sure how his smaller son is coping, but his son, who's a senior in high school, he still plays basketball, but like there's like three brothers who live together, so he'll go okay. over there at their house and play basketball in the driveway, like, so that
he's,
type of stuff.
He's getting some interaction,
yeah, and some exercise. That's the thing that I know one of my friends said for her son, who's probably middle school age, not being able, like, the fact that he's not gonna be able to play AAU this summer, you know, not being able to do Boy Scout shit, you know yeah. what I mean, like
summer shit. You know,
yeah, so, that yeah. shit was really hitting him hard. Like, he doesn't understand, like, why can't my friends come over? Like, that type of thing was really yeah, hitting him yeah, hard. Yeah, but yeah. I know a lot of people are starting to do social, sorry, no, a lot of people are starting to do social pods now, where it's like, okay, I'm going to identify a designated number of other people who have also been practicing social distancing, and we can do things together, but, like, only us,
only
right?
Us.
Like, we're yes. going to get together and do things together with the yeah. agreement that we only come in yep. contact with our group. Like,
I got
this.
You. Yeah. I got you. Yeah. yeah.
That I was literally just going to say that. I think that has been very helpful. I know, like, for kids like Jordan, you know, obviously, you know, physically going to school, physically seeing
yeah.
your friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
all of those sorts of things have been really good. I think that this has really thrown off her sleeping behavior.
Oh, I'm
don't
sure.
know, don't know if mine, I remember. Sure.
Yeah.
No, I mean, her shit is haywire.
Right.
Her shit is haywire right now. Like, she was like playing the guitar and singing at like 2 o'clock in the morning. like Mona yeah. was like, "Yo, what is going?
What's popping right now?
Furniture
yeah.
moving down here?
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
like, yo, right. we come down in the morning." And we'll, you know, like, the kitchen will be clean or whatever, and then we'll come down in the morning and we'll see, like, there's like baking shit, and then I'll go down to the refrigerator and there's like some dessert and a printed menu that she
oh,
had just
wow.
gotten up and like made. And so, you know, I'm noticing that because
you know, the school and the Zooms aren't necessarily consistent. First of all, they're basically giving kids work. They're not really
teaching.
They're not really teaching in the in the traditional sense. They're giving kids work. You know, you hand in your work. You kind of go over the work. There's a few Zooms here and there that are optional. She says she doesn't really like to participate on them because it's like basically she's like the teacher gets on there and asks, how am I dealing with COVID? It's like the same as I was last week. Like,
exactly.
Why, you know,
yeah.
And frankly, I didn't really have an argument to, you know, to
stand on with her point. Like,
I was like, if it's optional, okay, I'll stomach that.
Yeah.
But Jordan was used to, you know, getting up, you know, being up at 5:30 in the morning, you know, leaving, you know, she's in class at 7:30.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
she had a very like rigid kind of like boom, 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 boom. And then that shit is out the window. Now it's like, why am I getting up early? Why am I going to bed early? Like, for what?
Yeah.
For what? I'd be up at 3 in the morning watching King of Queens. I'm like, why not? The fuck? What else I got to do?
Exactly.
Well, I'm getting up tomorrow.
Exactly.
You know, I don't have nothing to do at 8 o'clock in the morning. So, like, so be it. You know, my shit is all thrown off.
Yeah, yeah. So she'll be fine. I think as we start to do what Nas said, which is, you know, sort of identify those pods. Like, she has about 2 or 3 friends that, you know, kind of routinely would come over to the house. I know the parents. You know, we communicate a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So I think I'll start to do that as the summer goes along. But it's not going to be no, like, the barbecues and all that
shit. Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's
over, man. That's over. That's completely cooked. So I'm on so I've been starting to work out back over at Yankee Stadium because obviously gyms are closed.
Yeah, I noticed that. And they have, like, a really big part workout area.
Yeah, yeah. They took some of that equipment out, I guess.
To discourage a whole bunch of people from being over there?
I guess some of that, and also cause some of that equipment that they took out was stuff that you could, like, lay on.
Got
and everything,
it.
And I guess they didn't want people to kind of, like, lay on each other with the virus and get, maybe somebody didn't wipe it down right, and you get, you know. So, like, a lot of the stuff they got left is, like, pull-up bars and, you know, stuff like that, push-up stuff. They still got the, obviously the handball courts are open, but they took the basketball rims down, haven't put those back up yet. But there's a massive track there too. Like, it's a really nice track actually. And it's interesting because I've noticed, like, you know, they always get a nice crowd there, but it's starting to become like a thing. Like, my boy hit me yesterday and said, yo, I heard that shit's like La Marina over there. I'm like, well, it do be a lot of things over there because there's no gyms. So now there's everybody starting to do this in light of not being able to go work out inside. But they keep it up nice. I mean, I ride my bike over there and shit. They keep it clean. But it's definitely getting more and more crowded. Like, each time I go, I'm like, the word is spreading that, like, that's the spot.
Yeah, I went to a spot over in South Orange. There's a hill.
Okay.
Actually, when it snows, that's where I would take the kids to go sledding.
Sleigh riding?
Yeah, yeah. But when it's not snow, people go and work out over there.
Okay.
So it was crazy because I went, and I mean, it was like damn near no parking.
That's what I'm saying.
And then there was a couple, like, I guess, like, 2 coaches. Like, they had, like, 5 or 6 kids out there with, like, weights.
Like,
and
training.
Training.
Yeah,
like, they were doing football training, doing the drills.
Mm-hmm.
It was just me, maybe about 4 of us doing the hill climbs.
Yeah.
It was just, I was kind of surprised that many people were out there. I mean, I knew I wasn't going to be alone, but you can definitely kind of see people, you know, they'll isolate in their little pod.
Yeah.
But there are more people coming out.
Exactly. Exactly. Like I said, the fact that, because I posted a picture of myself over at Yankee yesterday, and that's when my boy hit me. And the fact that he was like, yo, I heard it, studied it, and I showed me, oh, yeah, the word is out. Yankee Stadium is the place to be, kind of thing. Other thing is interesting uptown. I also haven't been below Harlem, so I don't know what's happening down there. But you seeing all these cats on the Revel bikes?
Yeah, but that's usual for this time of year.
Yeah, but no, those are the rental joints I'm talking about.
Oh no! Oh, you mean like the city bikes?
No, they're city bikes, but they're mopeds.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, they're called Revels. You see, you rent them just like a city bike with the app, but they're mopeds. And
I can see that, though.
Yeah,
I can
see that. It's popping up here with the Revels. Like, I see them all the time. Just, like, cats zooming. No helmet, of course. It's out here.
Of course.
You know, why would you protect yourself?
Why? For what? Like, why would you do that?
No mask, no helmet. I'm out here. I'm living.
I might
rent one, though, actually.
Last weekend? I think it was last weekend. It was, like, crunk up here.
But oh, yeah, because the weather was so crazy.
The weather was nice. The bachata and the salsa was playing in the street.
Popping.
I went to the store. Like, the streets were busy for the mm-hmm. long. And actually, I went down to the Food Town on 145th Street. I go there sometimes.
Oh, well, on 8th?
Yeah, on 8th. Mm-hmm. It's so, like, the streets popping. People were outside.
Yeah.
There was traffic for the first time, and I don't know how long. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see if that happens again this weekend, because I went out the other night, and the streets were quiet again, even though the weather was nice. So I don't know if it was just, like, it was the first, like, summer weather, and everybody was just outside. But, you know, uptown don't stay down.
Yeah.
But yeah, nothing.
No, it's going to happen again. Like,
And it's hard to be in a mask in the heat. It is hard. It's so, like, I was so hot and I was sweating inside on my face. And I was just like, oh, people ain't going to do this.
Then the mask, I smell a little funky.
Yeah. I was like, people not going to do this. Yeah, they're not going to do it.
I'm seeing less and less masks every time I go out. Even when I go over to Yankee, like, I'm one of the only people over in the workout area that's wearing a mask. And nobody else got a mask on but me.
Right. And I'll be honest, sometimes when I go outside, I do cloth instead of the disposable.
I've been doing a bandana.
Just because it's easier to, even though it offers you less protect. But see, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, it offers you less protection, but it's just easier to breathe.
Easier to breathe, yeah. The medical joints, like you said, they're not, you know, I get it, you know what I'm saying, like, to protect yourself. But if you're, like, doing any type of movement or exercise, that's just not.
You're going to pass out.
Yeah, it's disgusting. It's been a brutal week.
Yeah, man.
Just too much going on. Too much negativity, but I mean, I guess we'll get to it. But let's kind of start with some lighter shit. Did y'all watch Versus? Had a Versus weekend.
Basically, a holiday weekend.
A holiday weekend, yeah. They had Jagged Edge versus, well, first was Beanie Man versus Bounty Killer.
Yeah.
Then Jagged Edge. No, then Babyface on Sunday.
Well, Babyface wasn't Versus. Babyface was just him.
Oh, that wasn't Versus. That was part
no,
of
that was Face. That was just Face doing his own thing, because he was supposed to do that on Mother's Day. And he postponed it because of Dre's death.
Okay. And then we had
Jagged Edge on 112 on Monday. Versus just announced, I don't know if you saw this, Jeff, this is what me and Sean were talking about when you got on, that they're doing Kirk Franklin and Fred Hammond.
I didn't see that.
With an opening kind of like words of encouragement / mini sermon from TD Jakes this weekend. So, like, on some we all need, like, on some need a hug type.
Especially after what's been happening in the past 5-6 days.
Exactly.
Well, actually, more than that, because we could take it back. I mean, this run.
This
of,
is like the co- of, this week was like the culmination. Yeah this weekend was like Ahmad, a yeah. This week was like a culmination of bullshit.
Exactly. It was Ahmad, then the Brianna, then to George. I mean, then to Amy Cooper, and then to
and
George.
And then George, yeah. We'll get to that. So I want to say, regarding the Beanie versus Bounty, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as someone who didn't grow up in New York, but who's been in New York my entire adult life, I always, and I tweeted this, I'm always in denial about how much I fuck with 90s dance hall. Like, because you cannot have been outside in New York in the 90s and that not have been part of
a party experience. In the clubs, right? All the time
on the streets and the clubs. And so I was so, like, with Bounty and Beanie, I was like, I'll dip in and out. I want to see what the comments look like, you know, whatever. But in part because they had the two there together. Like, it was just a different experience.
It was a sound clash
mm-hmm. because they start, and for those who don't know what a sound clash is, because dance hall operates off rhythms the way hip hop operates off samples, which is you have the same kind of beat or whatever you want to call it that different artists do different music, do their songs to. these artists basically trade off on rhythms, like their songs on the same rhythm. And Beanie and Bounty have done this before together. Yeah. So A, they're in person together. B, they know how to, and this is kind of like, Sound Clash is kind of where DJ battles come from, and where the idea of verses kind of comes from. So they know how to trade off of each other and play off of each other. And as much as I was like, I'll dip in and out, the energy was so high.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was entertaining for so many reasons other than the music, right? Yeah, like Bounty and Beanie are hilarious.
Yeah.
And the comments were great. The live tweets about it were great. And like the nostalgia was on 100. So they started with the regular song for song. And then at one point they was like, fuck it, we going Sound Clash mode. And it was just, it was a really, it felt like a party.
It was very entertaining. Yeah, then the cops came.
Then the cops came and Bounty dipped the fuck out.
Bounced.
And Beanie was like, talking to the cops like, we got 500,000 people.
Yeah, you want to be that guy.
You want to be that guy.
You want to be that guy. We got 500,000 people around the world watching us right now. You want to be that guy.
You want to be that guy, officer. Good evening, officer.
We good.
And a lot of people were like, oh, the cops came now. It's a real bashment. Like, I really enjoyed it. And I had to
look
up to the TV and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, it was entertaining. It was a good time. Like you said, and it was interesting to see all the the Caribbean people like posting their little clips because they were going ham, of course, because it was, it was their music and their culture and stuff. And that was a good one. That was good. I saw Beanie posted, people were clowning Beanie because, he got a pot belly now.
Yeah. He got the rich Caribbean man's belly.
Yeah. Yeah. So he said, he posted something yesterday about he going to start working out. He's like, I heard everybody talking about me belly. You know what I'm saying? So now that was fun.
One of my friends was like, hey, he's not going to buy a large. No, a West Indian man ain't buying no large. So he's like, buying no large.
Yeah, but it was good. Like I said, dancehall, kind of started in the States in, I guess probably like the early 90s. That's Peace and Love to one of my mentors, Vivian Scott Chu, she signed Shabba Ranks and Patrick.
Okay.
Yeah, so she was very involved in kind of busting dancehall in the States. And then, like you said, then it really infiltrated because then it would be like rapper or R&B songs that had dancehall artists
doing them
and stuff. And then Pharrell and them did the stuff with Beanie. And then it just really became a thing,
Yeah. But also, like I said, if you're in New York, because New York.
Yeah, because they do like a reggae set.
The West Indian influence in New York is because there's so many Caribbeans here.
Exactly.
And not just if you're in Brooklyn, but like, shit, even I think about my line sisters, like there's only maybe like half of us are West Indian, so just thinking about being out at parties and just, again, like I said, being out in the streets and the days that I actually used to go to the Parkway, which I didn't do often because you'd be out there all day. There was chaos. Like no water. Chaos is hot. Yeah. No water to be found anywhere. But like that, so much of that was like summers. It really made me miss outside because it felt like outside music.
Yeah,
right?
It is outside music.
Yeah,
it's outside music. Yeah, so that was great. And then we had Jagged Edge versus 112 on
versus the Sound.
People calling them 56.
Yeah, because there's no Duran and Q.
It was only two of 112.
I watched half of that.
But the sound was distracting.
That's why I could only watch half. And I tried to say, I actually prefer the freezes and shit like we had with Nelly to the static that we had. And Versus, again, I love Swiss and Tim because they be throwing these niggas under the bus. Versus, once again, was like, we send these motherfuckers sound kits.
Yeah.
We tell them what to do because they do have Rolling Sound as a sponsor now. We're like, we tell them what to do, whether they use it or not. Yeah, I don't know. And even with Jagged Edge, they were in Brian Michael Cox's studio. So I think Brian was trying to help because Brian does dual IG lives all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
And so I'm still not sure because I think the problem might have been on 112's side, but 112 sound was clearer but had static, whereas Jagged Edge sounded like their music sounded way far away.
Way far away.
You couldn't really hear it. You could hear it. It's kind of
just playing off a phone.
Yeah, you could hear them, but you couldn't hear the music. Which,
well, you could hear them because them niggas kept talking.
They was talking through every song,
like,
legit.
Nigga.
Can I hear that? Like, we can hear you.
Press mute. Nobody. It's 18 of y'all niggas in there.
And then all everybody just chopping it up.
Yeah. Right? Like,
and the niggas is like legitimately having telephone conversations and texting.
Right.
And
even like, through 112 songs, they just be talking. Just talking.
What time you coming by later? You know what I'm saying?
But my favorite part was Key Sweat just randomly popping up at 112's house. I was like, oh, it's an uncle off now.
It's an uncle off now.
That, yo.
And like left the car running, dipped in, dipped right back out.
Nigga, that's how, what that looked like, that's like when you go to borrow, like, I got to go get the drill.
Right, yeah, right. Run, nigga. Hey, let me run
hey,
in
nigga,
and say,
my,
hey, real quick.
Hey, let me, hey, nigga, where my ladder at? I need to go change these bulbs.
Exactly.
That's what that looked like.
Like, yeah, literally, you could tell.
I left the car, and I can't, she in the car, I can't stay long.
But that was so, that was so Southern, which I love, because apparently Keith lives up the street from whoever's house they was at.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell that nigga still had the fob in his hand.
Yeah.
Came in the door right quick, peeked onto the camera, said, what's up? That would be like if you had a cookout, nigga, come grab a plate, make the rounds, leave right back
out.
Somebody told, oh, they downstairs. Go down there and say hi.
Word. Yeah.
That was exactly that.
So, I mean, I'd be interested to see this Kirk and Fred thing. We had Hez and John B. Key, but that wasn't Versus either, was it?
Yes, it was. Well, no, it wasn't.
It wasn't,
they
right?
started it on their own. They decided to do it on their own, and then Versus co-signed it. Like,
Shem
gave them a shout-out, but they were doing it on their own, whereas this one is being promoted by Versus. And what Versus is doing now in an attempt to increase their branding situation is that now they are also hosting the Versus on the Versus Instagram page.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they're trying to, you know, better handle quality control, but that still doesn't work if you have the people in two separate areas. So let's pray, because that John P. Key
Hez
sounds was horrific.
Horrible. And they were playing the whole song.
The whole
6 minute version.
With all the choir moments and all the live, like all everything. So let's just be in prayer.
You talking about two old dudes that be in church for 7 hours. Of course they gonna play the whole record.
At one point John P. Key's camera, like he had set the camera down, and this nigga literally had like a DAT player under his joint, and I was like, that's why the sound sounds like this, because this nigga got 90s equipment in his motherfucking studio. Like, a DAT player? Like, do DATs exist? What are you? Are
do
you
they even work
DATs
now?
Like, do they work? The fuck?
What are you plugging that into?
Wait, so are they doing it Saturday or Sunday?
Hold on. Let me.
Because, you know, it might, because I know Hez and them did theirs. That was a Sunday, actually.
Yeah, they did theirs on a Sunday.
But they might do Saturday. I mean, Saturday's been kind of like the versus.
They're doing it on, hold on, at 5 o'clock. That's early as fuck. Hold on. On Sunday.
It is Sunday. Well, it's Sunday at 5. Yeah, you know, you come over to church.
I mean, is somebody going to have dinner afterwards? Like,
yeah, they probably have dinner beforehand, you know. Then, you know, go on and get your plate, go and sit down and watch these boys play these records.
Right.
So that was, that. You know, I'm looking forward to that. I mean, just kind of see for the energy, because Kirk's a character, you know. So I'm kind of seeing what he.
And
what
people have been wanting Kirk to see Kirk in this.
Yeah.
He does well. Like, he. Like, what he does well works for this platform.
Absolutely.
Because he's quick. He has the catalog.
Definitely.
He's super quick, and he's super charismatic. And
yeah,
he's
funny.
He gets it. He understands pop culture, you know. So he works for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Did y'all, either of y'all get to watch Lovebirds?
Not yet.
Yes.
I actually watched it. Okay, so this is my review. I liked it. I liked that there was some. It actually surprised me, because some of it I was like laughing. Like, it was like some parts are like really, really funny. And the chemistry between Issa and, I can't how you say his name, But the chemistry is great between them. They're like, it's really great. Like, they really playing off each other well. I was even like, wonder in certain seasons, I'm like, I wonder if they just kind of riff this, because they would just kind of like do certain things and kind of talk back and forth with each other, and they were really, really good. It's just that to me, like, the plot just kind of got weird. It kind of started.
But it's supposed to be a little silly, though, right? Or no?
Oh, yeah, no, not that. Silly doesn't bother me. It just kind of started to fall apart a little bit. Like, wait, what? Okay. But overall, I think for what it is, which is like this movie that's now on Netflix, because obviously you can't go to theater.
Yeah, because it was supposed to be a theater release. I think it's one of the first instances of a theater release that we're seeing move to streaming.
Yeah, and it's tomorrow's coming up. I think there's the Five Bloods, which is a Spike Lee joint. There's King of Staten Island, which is the Pete Davidson, Judd Apatow movie. Those are coming. But for what it is on Netflix, I think it's like a great, like, sit down with your girl and just kind of have a good time. There's no sex in it, really. There's no real cursing, you know, a little bit. It's nothing crazy. You don't have to, like, run the kids away from it either. You know, it's a kind of good, you know, feel-good movie. What'd you think, bro?
Yeah, I thought it was a solid movie. I would say I don't necessarily know that I would use the word chemistry. I think they have a great comedic timing.
Okay.
Chemistry.
Okay. Okay.
But
yeah, not sexual chemistry.
Yeah, I was gonna say as a couple, they were really not believable.
Yeah.
Like not even a little bit. But God bless. Right. Yeah. It worked. The one real, like, sort of obviously there were the holes in the plot, which again, you know, we're not, you know, it's a 90-minute movie, so it's an easy watch. You're not really
very easy watch
as, you know, some, you know, great, you know, incredible movie making, you know, movie magic that's going to happen. But the plot holes at points was kind of like,
that's what my point.
Did anybody think about this? And then my biggest issue is how there were two issues. This is shot in New Orleans.
Yes.
I've been to New Orleans a lot.
Mm.
I have never seen empty streets in New Orleans.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I'm like, when they're like driving and car chasing, I'm like, this is impossible in New Orleans.
And then my other issue is, how do you take the most charismatic, charming city? I don't know anybody that wouldn't put New Orleans in their top five. I mean, you might have people put Savannah or put, you know, some other places, but like New Orleans is a character.
Yeah.
In and of itself.
And you don't really see it.
How do you miss that entirely?
Yeah, they didn't show, they didn't go to the quarter. They didn't go down to the waterfront. Like none of that shit. They didn't go to St. Charles.
They didn't even have anybody with a fucking New Orleans accent. It was just,
that's real.
I mean, it was just like, nobody? Nobody?
On the low, your shot is in Toronto, because.
I'm kind of looking, and I was like, yeah, this just kind of feels like somebody that doesn't really kind of, look, and I'm not saying I'm an expert on New Orleans, but I know just logistically, that the shit y'all doing in New Orleans ain't happening, especially where y'all are.
You're not driving fast nowhere in New Orleans.
Nowhere. At all.
You'd be lucky if you could drive a block with no traffic, let alone like doing a speed chase, like turn left, turn right, you know. But it made me wonder, I guess, because, you know, Issa had the photograph too, and that was in Louisiana as well, right?
Part of it. It was based between New York and Louisiana. It's possible, because I was actually surprised that she had two vehicles, even though they're very different. I was surprised that she had these two vehicles, because this was originally supposed to come out much earlier. I think it was supposed to come out like not too long after shutdown happened, but they started promoting it, or at least they started promoting it while they were still promoting the photograph. And it surprised me that she had two vehicles where she was kind of a romantic lead, even though one was a comedy and one was a more drama dramatic at the same time. So maybe they weren't filming at the same time.
Yeah, but I think that Louisiana has begun to be, you know, be very generous to production.
Oh, well,
tax breaks. They, you know, obviously you want to, you know, encourage people to come down there. They come with crews. They hire locals. They bring business. And again, New Orleans is a character in and of itself.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
Yeah, I'm also curious to see. I'm going to watch the Tracee Ellis Ross joint. I don't know. I'm nervous. Now I am nervous.
Wow.
Cuz she's singing?
Well, just because it just looks
the
like
the clips look really And listen,
but I like Tracee and I like Ice Cube, so I'm going to give it a play.
I like Tracee. Obviously I have no problem with watching 2 hours of Tracee Ellis Ross on screen. However, this one here, I'm going to give it a shot.
I'm going to try it because I love Tracee. I can't really tell what it's about. And it feels like Tracee in a drama, which I'm not saying, not drama, like heavy drama, but like, I'm not saying Tracee can't stretch.
Yeah, but we're used to her being like in the comedic kind of role.
Yeah, and also like, I feel like this is Tracee's first movie role, so I kind of feel a way that
first
she
major,
didn't go
like,
for
something. The only other movie role I remember being in was in Daddy's Little Girls with Tyler. She played Gabrielle Union's friend, but that was obviously a small role. It wasn't like a big role. So we'll see. We're going to see. We're going to see. So, So I'm caught up with Before the 90 Days.
Isn't it amazingly terrible? But, like, you can't
look
pull away from it. You really can't. It's like a social experiment.
It really is. And what's blowing me away is, like, these episodes be, like, 2 hours long. Like,
and that's kind of a new thing. But you're still
looking. But you're still locked in.
Yeah.
It ain't like I'm like, oh, my God, when's this shit going to end? Like, it'd be, like, an hour 45, and you'd be like, oh, wow, shit, I kind of want to see more.
Yeah, and not only, like, and it's to the point, this is the genius of that franchise, and I've said it on the show before. It definitely is, like, because I do watch it kind of, like, from a sociological standpoint and for the mess, because the premise of the show makes you think that you're going to go in and it's going to be about how the people who are trying to come here for a green card are scamming, but the Americans are always the most terrible people.
They're
so terrible. They're awful. Like, honestly, it makes us look, but I mean, yeah. We're terrible people. It makes Americans look like the horrible people that they are.
It's the ugly American thing. Like, you better definitely be lucky that I'm even picking you and giving you
right.
Shot.
Like,
here.
Like bringing women over, like clean this whole house, cook my shit. Like, what do you mean you need $20 to get your hair done? Like, women holding the green cards over men's head. Like, it's like complete awful disrespect and disregard of culture.
So in this series, like, who is your top three worst people?
So there's a new season of Before the 90 Days that's on right now.
Yeah, that's the one I'm watching.
The worst, and I've watched all of them, and there have been some horrible people.
This is the only
and
one I've watched.
Okay, so this season has taken two of the really bad cast members from the last season and found like worse versions of them. So there's this one guy named Paul who's a past cast member who got engaged to this chick in Central America, and he himself was a mess. He had a criminal record for like attempted arson, but like he got there, the chick didn't speak any English. They had to go through the translation app, but he wanted her to take a STD test. Every time he came to America and went back, he wanted her to take a STD test. When she got pregnant, he wanted a paternity test. Like, he was just an awful, awful person. So that guy, they found this dude, Big Ed, and he's that guy like times 1,000. So Big Ed is horrendous, right? And like, there's a reason you haven't been in a relationship in 24 years, my nigga.
It's actually 28.
28 years, like 28. Since your daughter was born, basically.
Yeah.
And Big Ed also, what's funny to me about Big Ed is that with a lot of these dudes, they pick these really young women, like they're 50.
23. Ed is 54.
They pick these really young women.
23.
Right? Who are from literal third world countries.
Dirt poor.
And literally, clearly you're picking these women because you have issues with dating normal ass women in America, right? Mm-hmm. Like women who speak your language and who have options. Mm-hmm. And you want to lure this woman in with the idea of being able to rescue her from poverty. Yep. But then they pull this whole, how do I know if she really loves me? How do I know if she's not using me? Of course she's fucking using you, just like you're using her. Like, just like you're using her because you want a younger, submissive, attractive woman. that you wouldn't be able to get an equivalent to in the States. Of course, like, it's a quid pro quo. And the fact that they always act like it's not a quid pro quo is very confusing to me. So Ed's been that person on the thousand. Then there's this other
character. Oh, but let's talk about Ed real quick, though, because I just love that the woman who he picked is this woman named Rose. Rose, again, from the Philippines. She does speak English, but, you know, it's definitely not her first language. You know, early on in the process, is Ed definitely is, you know, feeling like, and maybe he did actually initially have the upper hand.
Yes.
Like, he's like, yeah, you know, do this and do that.
But you could tell she was taking notes through everything. Like, shit would happen. And because she doesn't speak a lot of English, she would keep her opinions to herself, but she would share it with production.
Exactly.
And you could tell, like, this bitch was taking notes.
Absolutely. And she finally hit a limit. 23 years old. And, like, I don't know her
educational
background. Yes, but she's very mature, and she's very smart. She's very street smart. Again, I don't know what her education background is, but she's no dummy.
And he wasn't giving her credit for that. Like, he was definitely trying to... He was trying to talk to her like she was 11. Yeah, like, legit.
And like you said, initially, she was kind of eating a lot of that shit.
Yeah.
And then she got to the point where she was like, you know what, B? I'm out.
Yeah. And just read him down. You don't love me. You don't love my son. You don't care about me. You treat me horribly. Like she just ran him, and he was like, "Oh, that's so you think I'm a terrible person?" And she was like, "Yes,
yeah,
I do." You know,
she said, "I'm done." And I love how she read him, but it wasn't the American reality show read. She didn't yell. She didn't curse. She didn't call him out his name. She wasn't like, "Fuck you, you mother." No, and she could because he looks bonkers. There's a lot of shit she could have said to him, but she didn't. She just quietly sliced and diced his ass, and then
after he's like forced her to shave, been all kinds of creepy.
Talking about her breath.
That's the other reason these dudes do. They always be like, "I brought you a gift," and then pull out lingerie.
Yeah,
that's not a gift for you, not for her. Like,
you know what I'm saying?
Just been really disrespectful and rude, and like totally disregarded her kid. Just all kind of shit. And like you said, she ate it. And the one thing she wanted was, and he knew this. He knew this the whole time. She wanted more children because she's only 24.
Yeah.
And I think she wanted to, you know, she was going to come to the States, like, not only bring her kid for a better life, but have like a family unit in the States. And he knew that. And he knew he didn't want that. He knew he was planning on getting a vasectomy. Already had the shit booked.
Yep.
So what's ironic is that as much as he tried to accuse her of lying to him, and this is how the Americans always move in this shit. As much as he was trying to accuse her of lying to him, he was lying to her
the whole time.
And that's why
he lied about his height.
He lied about his height. You know, he lied. But the biggest thing was all this time he lied about wanting kids, and he tried to accuse her of using him for money because her sister had asked him for some money. It turned out that what her sister had asked him for was the equivalent of $70 US.
Yeah, it was $75.
And he acted like she had hit him up
for like 20 grand.
Grand.
$75
US. And, you know, so when he finally was like, "I don't want to have more kids," that's when she was finally like, "You know what? Fuck all this shit." You know, because she was willing to do everything else. She was like, "Fuck all this shit." So there's Big Ed. And turns out Big Ed has filed for bankruptcy twice in the past several years. Once, I think, right before he went on the show. So his pockets might have been stretched even more than he was admitting, which is also often the case. So the other one is, there's this woman who's been on several seasons of First Darcy. Before the 90 Days. Darcy's on this one too, but there's a woman, I was saying that they found like versions of other cast members. So there's this woman named Angela who's been on several other seasons of Before the 90 Days and 90 Day Fiancé, who was 50-year-old white woman from Georgia who's engaged to this black dude from Nigeria who's 30. And they've been on like several seasons. So they found like another version of Angela, but turns her up. Because with Lisa, the thing about Angela is that even though she's awful, like she's an awful, awful white woman, there are moments where you can actually tell she loves this man. Sometimes she's actually funny. You can actually see like soft moments in her. This bitch Lisa is horrible. Like, she's miserable. She's nasty. She's bossy. She's
racist.
Delusional. She's fucking racist. And she's engaged to a rapper from Nigeria who goes
Usman,
who goes by Soulja Boy. word. Which is hilarious. And she's just terrible. Like, she doesn't give a fuck about anything. Like,
his culture, his
nothing. Like, with the chick Angela, when Angela went to meet her fiance's name is Michael. When she went to meet Michael's mom, like, she called her mommy. She brought her a gift. Like, she was so deferential. She gave her a hug. She ate the food. You know what I mean? Like, she was so, like, what do you need? Like, you could tell, like, she actually tried to. She was also really, like, you're not going to boss me around type shit. But when she went into the family home, she was super humble and super everything. This chick, like, she cares about nothing. I think she's awful. And she's...
When she goes to meet his family, she goes in with the attitude of, like, let's get this shit over with.
Yeah.
Like, hurry up. I'm going to do it, but I'm just doing it just to get it over
with. Like, she went to the mosque once with his mother, and as soon as they left the mosque, she was like, okay, can we get married now?
I did everything you told me to do. Exactly.
You know, like, she's just really... And every time he calls her out on her bullshit, she just gets super defensive and mm-hmm. super angry. But they're still... I think they're still together. Like, she's on Instagram as Baby Girl Lisa, which is hilarious. Wow. Which is the song he wrote for her.
Yes,
and
he called
And she just spends all day arguing with people on the internet, which is like, you're 50-something years old. Like, 53. Surely you have something better to do with your time. Yeah.
So, the show is really... I didn't think I was going to like it anywhere as much as I did. So, and then, you know, it's a show because... unlike, you know, all reality shows kind of have versions, but this show in particular, on social media, has like spun so many things. It's like there's a therapist who like watches the show
breaks and them talks down. About,
breaks them down. There's like these people kind of have their whole you know, YouTube channel is about this show.
It's an ecosystem.
This show
because
is
there's so many of them because there is. The original 90, like TLC knew they had a good thing here because there's the original 90-day fiancé, there's before the 90 days, there's 90-day fiancé, happily ever after, which is once they get past the marriage, continuing to follow the couples. There's 90 days the other way, which is when the Americans go overseas for the K-1 visa process. And there is... also now 90 days, what now, which is kind of like happily ever after, but also just like a catch up on what's been going on with some people. And then now they got the pillow talk thing, which is the best. A lot of shows try to do this where they have the reality shows where they have former cast members watch the show and give commentary. This is the best one.
Yeah.
I've seen, I watch every episode and then I sit there and watch pillow talk every week.
Yeah. I didn't realize that because I wasn't watching the show. I didn't realize the ecosystem was so vast.
It's huge, which is why once you get sucked in, you're in. You're just like in, because all told, there's like 20-something seasons of TV to catch up on.
And then more YouTube videos to watch and more pillow talks to watch. Yep.
And there's Reddit threads.
Reddit threads. Whoever's not watching, obviously it's a big ratings.
My suggestion is always, I came in on before the 90 days. My suggestion to other people, as much as I've watched, even though, like, I find the actual original 90 Day Fiancé season the most boring, I find all the other offshoots more interesting. So my suggestion to everybody is usually to start with before the 90 days, just to see the foolishness that leads up to this process.
Okay.
And then go into...
other shit.
But so, this season of Before the 90 Days is the incredible. Worst cast. It's the worst cast I've ever on both sides. It's just the worst cast I've ever
terrible
seen.
People. Awful. Real quick, I want to mention the Andre Harrell special that BET did last Sunday, commemorating his life and legacy. Had several people in there, Jamie Foxx, Quincy Jones.
Ed Lover,
Naomi Campbell, Kamora Lee.
And the kids, which is important.
The kids.
And Russ.
Yeah, Russell.
Who else was in there? I'm trying to think. Albie Shore.
Albie Shore was in it.
And they didn't have Face himself, but they put Face's tribute in there.
They showed him facing
and
him
they song. Put Puff's tribute video.
Yeah, and then Cassidy, DJ Cassidy closed the show because him and Andre were working on another mixtape.
Yeah.
And Andre passed away. So this one kind of wanted to mention that. I don't know if there'll be more tributes coming on or not.
It was really, I also want to mention.
And then the services also last week.
Yeah, it was on Saturday. But it was a small private.
Yeah, small. Yeah.
But I also want to mention it because all they probably had like maybe a week to really pull that together to start to go into edits.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, as much remote programming as I've seen, it was just really, really, really well done. Like it was just really well done. And, you know, shout out to Wendy Creedle, his ex-wife, to Gianni, his son, to O'Neill, his nephew. And I think KP was helping with like the music supervision.
Oh, yeah, Pharrell was in it too.
Yeah, Pharrell's in it too. I saw KP mention something.
Okay.
And what was important about it was, you know, we talked about this. Every tribute to Dre that you saw, like Dre's, the Andre Harrell family tree is so much more vast than people realize.
Yeah,
not
absolutely.
Not just from what spun out, from Uptown, and then in turn from Motown and Bad Boy. There's so many quote unquote like children, nephew, nieces, etc. of Andre out there who owe him their careers and
plus the television and film stuff.
Like so many people who owe Dre their careers in some way, shape, form, or fashion, and even people who didn't directly work under Dre, but Dre will always give you like there's a ton of little stories out there like how Dre convinced Russell to sign Montel Jordan, or how Dre walked over to Run at a party and was like, yo, your family is so dope, like y'all should do a reality show, or how, you know what I mean, like just little seeds Dre would plant in people and things he could see. And I think that like when Kimora's kids came on, because he's their like uncle, godfather everything, I thought that was one of the most important. Oh, Mariah was on too. I thought that was one of the most important tributes to him, because Dre, the unique thing about Dre in a world of entertainment executives is that he was accessible to everybody. And, you know, you didn't have to go through a whole bunch of middlemen, whatever, to get to him, like interns on up, like he students, like you could talk to him, ask him questions. And that's what Ming or Aoki, I think it was actually Aoki, I think Ming was crying too hard to talk, but Aoki was like, you know, I could tell him, I saw, as a kid, I could be like, I saw a blue ladybug. And the next time he saw me, he'd be like, how's that blue ladybug?
Yeah, he will remember shit. Like, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think that was so important to note about him. That was what was unique about him. Like, he could see you, which a lot of these dudes.
Yeah, he wasn't just like blown past you. Like, yeah. And I also thought it was fly. I didn't know this story about, his partner, Alonzo Brown, he said he wrote Strictly Business.
And it was about Lorianne. No, not Strictly. Yeah, Strictly Business.
Was it Honey or was it Honey?
Oh, Honey was about Lorianne, but I think Strictly Business was also based on a party where they saw somebody dancing with Lorianne. I think I read that story somewhere.
But he said he gave Dre the script, and Dre just walked it upstairs and got and called him and was like, yo, we're making your movie. And he was like, wait, what? what are you talking about? Like, he's like, yeah, nah, I told you, we're going to make the movie. Like, I just got it greenlit. We're about to get it cracking. Like, so he was just kind of like, that's what he did to so many people. Like, he just believed in you. Even like, and all them kept saying, like, even when I didn't believe in myself, like, you know, he believed in me and he knew that I was going to be this or that. He could see some shit that I couldn't see. And then,
and as much as all these people talk about Black excellence, that's like, Andre had proof that, like, he really wanted to put everybody on. Like, he was really going, not like, when I get to whatever, I got you. But, like, Dre was really going to put you on. Like, Dre wanted everybody to win.
Yeah.
He wanted more Black executives in the system. He wanted more Black decision makers in the system. And he understood that giving to you did not take away from him.
Exactly.
Like, he understood.
He wasn't threatened, like, oh, I gave him this shot, so now he's going to be bigger than
me.
Right. He didn't care about that. So that's, I definitely just wanted to mention that, because, you know, he's obviously well-deserved. Y'all niggas still ain't watching Insecure, right?
No. Gosh, I will. Once it's all over, I'll binge it and
watch
it.
Who said that on the Twitter? I'll bring it up every week. And you niggas be like, hit me in the face, like, nah, nigga, we ain't watch that shit.
I
forgot, but it, again, it was this week was a Molly episode. Issa was in it at the very beginning, and that's it. And the rest of the episode was Molly and her boyfriend Andrew and his brother and wife. They went to Mexico, so it was very interesting. But they did this each episode last week, all her, and then in a Molly episode, all this week, like all her.
I think
and
this
they're bringing it back around. You see, they're going to bring it back around for them to have it. I don't want to call it a confrontation, but a moment. Now, yeah. I don't know what that moment's going to be. And then they dropped a little jewel. Actually, sidebar: Jay Ellis, who plays Lawrence, directed this week's episode.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So, and he was in the very end. Like, he's coming back from San Francisco. They come back from Mexico. They see each other in the airport. So right. Everybody was like, okay, is that a jewel? Does that mean he got a gig up in the Bay? Because he's a tech guy.
Yeah.
He's going to be moving. Like, it was very interesting how they kind of put these little
kind of Easter eggs. I think this Sunday should be the season finale, if I'm not mistaken.
Is it? I
think they were only doing eight episodes this season.
Okay.
Maybe, so I don't know.
A big week.
I have one show I want to shout out, which you two are not going to care about at all, but some of our listeners might. So I told y'all I've been just binging a lot of Netflix season. So Netflix put out this show last week called Sweet Magnolias, and it's exactly what it sounds like.
It's been trending on Netflix, yeah, top 10.
It's based on a series of romance novels, which already, and the trailer looks exactly like that. Like, it looks like some cheesy romance novel shit, but I was like, I ain't got shit else to do. I might as well watch it. And the first two episodes is about a group of three girlfriends, one of which is Heather Headley, in like a coastal South Carolina town that's somewhere near Charleston.
Okay.
And who grew up together. The Heather Headley character just moved back. One is going through a divorce. One owns a restaurant. They're about to start a business together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the initial premise. And the first two episodes I was watching, and I was like, okay, this was like a script that was written for Julia Roberts in the 90s that somebody like pulled out of a drawer and dusted off.
Okay.
But I was like, but it's fine for what it was, because I was watching it as like background. You know, sometimes you want something that's on, but you don't have to like completely be locked in on it.
Yeah.
But in every episode, even when there would be like these really cheesy, heavy, like they're trying too hard to sound like it's South Carolina moments, there would be like these really real moments that dichotomy was interesting to me. Like, okay, but this was very realistic and this was very corny, but that kept me locked in. And as the series went on, the writing got better, the characters got stronger, the plot lines got stronger. It's kind of like you could see where the team had used the source material to establish the story, and then they were kind of taking over.
Doing their own thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And by like mid-season, Jamie Lynn Spears is in it as like the woman that the chick's husband had an affair with, which was like perfect casting. And like by mid-season, I realized I was really locked the fuck in. Like, I stayed up all night to watch this shit. And it had like a for real cliffhanger. So what's interesting is that, so I was tweeting about it, and I kept tweeting like, okay, y'all, I'm invested. Okay, wait, I love these people. You know, like that, like, oh my God, I need season two immediately. And somebody tagged the director. So the director DM'd me. And it turns out the guy who directed this was the director of Gossip Girl. Because I actually said by the end, I said it's giving me CW.
Oh, Gossip Girl. Yeah,
he directed by CW. He was one of the directors of the OC. And he most recently was one of the directors of Pretty Little Liars, which was a really great, well-done show.
Reese Witherspoon joint, right?
Yeah, the Reese Witherspoon joint. Not Little Fires Everywhere, but Pretty Little Liars.
The HBO joint.
With Zoe Kravitz, too.
Yeah.
Really, really well done. So it made sense. And what I really enjoyed about it was that, you know, like, it's not going to win no Emmys, but it's, you know, that CW era of dramas where you had adult conflict, but you also had teen conflict on an equal scale. And that's what I really enjoyed about this, is that I feel like, I've said this before, maybe not on here, but, you know, when in the 90s, and the early aughts, there was so much teen-driven television, and I feel like they don't get that anymore. But now it seems to be coming back.
Well, it's coming back. It's coming back on Netflix, though.
Yeah, on Netflix. Buffy, 90210, all that stuff. Because there's also Never Have I Ever, which is teen-driven, which is also very, very good. It's very, 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 very good. But so I feel I'm happy that teens get to see their own stories as well. I felt like that was important to me coming up. But it's just really, it's a really good, like I said, if you dug like CW era stuff, you'll be into this. And it was like a for real cliffhanger. Like, I was like, oh shit. Like, I almost went and bought a book to see if I could find out what happened next, but I'm not sure how far they've gotten off plot line, but it's worth, as a black person, one of the things I noted was that the cast is truly diverse, like diverse to the point where I was like, there actually wouldn't be this many black people fucking with white people in this town in South Carolina in real life. But you know what I mean? But like that's how diverse it really was.
Yeah.
And Heather Headley was like really good. Like we need more Heather Headley roles. So I just wanted to bring that up. If you're looking for a binge, I suggest Sweet Magnolias on Netflix. And then Never Have I Ever on Netflix, which is also really cute.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let's jump into the darkness. We've covered Ahmaud Arbery on here. We mentioned Breonna Taylor on here. I felt like with Breonna, and I don't mean this in any type of negative way, but the way the cops in Louisville like kind of covered up so much shit, it wasn't a lot to mention. It felt like it was getting some light put on it, and then all these new things happened, and now the light is going off of her case again. You know, she was about to get her just due, I guess, for lack of a better term. And then this week we had started with this guy. What's his name? Christian. What's his last name?
Cooper. It's Amy Cooper and Christian.
Christian Cooper. I thought it was Cooper. Yeah. Who is a birder. Lives here in New York. Assuming there's somewhere in the Central Upper West Side. That's where kind of like that part of the park is that he was in. He's out there watching birds and, you know, minding his own business.
In this area of the park. So Central Park, for y'all who don't live here, is huge and vast. And there's like little worlds inside of the park.
Yeah, there's kind of like pockets in the park of different things that happen.
So there's an area of the park called the Rambles, which is supposed to be like conserved and protected.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of ground growth and flora and fauna and all that good stuff. And the reason birders go there often is because you can see ground birds, birds who stay low to the ground or who move around on the ground. And that's, so the area is cut off. Like if you have a dog there, your dog has to be on leash.
Yeah.
And that's what started all of this.
This drama, because this woman, Amy Cooper, had a dog.
Cocker Spaniel.
She had adopted, I guess, right?
He was a rescue.
And didn't have the dog on a leash. And Christian Cooper, asked her to leash her dog. He didn't say it aggressively. He wasn't yelling and cursing at her. And she just,
even though she claimed it, so he asked her to leash her dog, she responded like on some kind of like I'll do what I want type
shit. Like, who the fuck are you to tell me what to do?
What he posted to her, and this is important because this is what the whataboutism people have been grabbing hold on, because he said this himself in his own account, that he said to her, well, you can do what you want to do, I'm gonna do what I want to do, and you're not gonna like it. But then immediately after, what he meant by that was he pulled out a bag of treats. And what he has said that he does is he pulls out treats and offers the treats to the dogs because dog owners hate the idea of their dogs eating something from somebody else. So that often will motivate the owner to put the dog back on leash so that the dog doesn't go running over to Christian to get a treat, right? Maybe it's a little backwards or whatever, but his intention isn't actually to feed the dog treats. It's to actually scare the dog owner into...
To leash the dog.
So he pulled out a bag of treats. Oh, sorry, my mic dropped. He pulled out a bag of treats and went to toss a treat at Henry, the dog, at which point she freaked out. She was like, don't touch my dog. Mind you, he wasn't trying to
He's very far away from her, at least 10 feet or so.
Right. So at the point, he says at the point where she yelled, don't touch my dog, that's when he started filming. And when she noticed that he was filmed, because he knew that she was about to go full white lady.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, for the record, I'm not even using the term Karen anymore, because fuck that cutesy shit. This is like some white woman. Let's call it what it is. This is some white woman shit. So she goes full white woman and he starts filming. And we see on camera, she's several yards away from him. Feet. She's several yards away from him.
Mm-hmm.
Crosses over aggressively. Don't film me. Put the camera away. And he's saying to her, please don't come near me. Please don't come any closer to me. Please stop coming closer to me. Now, when he says, please stop coming closer to me, that's when she says, well, I'm going to call the police. Now, he hasn't done anything.
He's doing nothing.
He's telling her to stop coming close to me.
She's trying to watch some birds.
Right, but she's asking him to stop filming And she says, well, so because he won't stop filming her, she says, well, I'm going to call the police. And he says, please do. Mm-hmm. And she then says, I'm going to tell them I'm being attacked by, no, there's an African-American man who's threatening me. Like, yeah. This is what she says to him. I'm going to tell the police there's an African-American man who's
And you know what that means.
Exactly. And she, now, mind you, all this time, she's dragging poor Henry by his collar.
Yeah, yanking his dog around. Up.
The dog is literally spinning, twisting, hanging.
Like, chill.
The dog is like, nigga, like, it takes her a couple minutes. Like, it takes her like a minute to realize, like, the dog is scratching at her. He's barking. He's whining.
Yeah.
While she's making the 911 call and doing exactly what she said, saying, I'm in the Rambles. There's an African-American man. He's threatening me and my dog. And then when she's not getting the reaction she wants, like, she turns up the emotion in her voice.
Yep.
Please, I don't know.
He's threatening me. Shit.
Yeah. And it's kind of at that moment that she realizes, oh, fuck, I'm choking my dog. And finally leashes the dog. And when she leashes the dog, even though she's still on the phone with 911, Christian says, thank you, and stops filming and goes on about his business. Now, of course, the video went viral because what the fuck? And white people are like, I can't believe how, like, her voice changed and her other. And everybody black is like, we've been doing it. This has been happening since the playground.
Yeah, it's happened
literally
day,
since the playground. Like, we've been dealing with this shit. Yeah. This is what they do. And, like, she lost her job. Allegedly,
she lost her dog.
She had to return the dog, which I was like, and I honestly believe that part of the reason this turned up so much was because of the dog abuse. She had to return Henry. And I want to see her charged with filing a false report, personally.
Yeah.
But this is like, even with this irrefutable proof of, like, this is what white women do, they 100% know what they're doing when they call 911. Like, this is true. They know what they're doing when they call 911. They know that they are weaponizing their white womanhoodness, because part of the fabric of America is that a white woman is a damsel in distress and she must be safe.
How dare you?
It's around cowboy culture. It's around knight culture. Like, all of that is wrapped up. Hero culture is all around saving the damsel in distress, and that's always a white woman. And it's like,
and then they triple fucked up, because it just so happens that Christian's background is kind of unassailable. You know what I'm saying? He's a nice guy.
Not that it should matter.
I'm not saying it matters at all.
But it proves that, like, it doesn't make a difference. Like,
doesn't
Christian,
make a difference.
Like, Christian ain't even, no offense to Christian Cooper, but, like, I don't even know how down with us Christian even is, because Christian was also just like, as long as she keeps her dog on the leash, I don't really know that we have any problems. I was like, come on, nigga.
Yeah.
Like,
Christian, you know, he got Harvard grad.
He's
LGBT. He's like a bioscience something.
Yeah, and also, like, he's a black man who's birding.
Yeah.
What the, like?
Yeah, so you already know where his mindset is. Again, God bless. That's your thing.
Yeah.
But the fact that he doesn't actually have any criminal history, he has nothing behind him that they could kind of point at and say, well, we did it because really this.
Right.
He really was fucked up, because, like, you can't say nothing about this dude. Like, this guy's like the most law-abiding dude ever. You know what I'm saying?
Which also goes to prove that, like, profiling really isn't based on shit. And it was worse than profiling, because she wasn't even profiling him. She was clear that he wasn't doing shit, but she knew that saying it was an African-American man threatening her, knew what reaction that was going to have. Which means that white people are also acutely aware of the disparity in how police handle shit. Like, they know, like, she does, like, she's pulled the curtain back. Y'all know.
Because
she wouldn't have said that shit.
Otherwise.
She did that shit on purpose. Like, y'all clearly know, you know.
What do you think, bro?
I mean, I kind of feel the same way. I think you guys have said it all. We've known this behavior. We've seen this behavior. This is a part of our reluctancy to call 911. Even at times when we probably should be calling 911, we will just not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We know it's an L.
We know it's not just the L, but we also know what the potential is on the other side of that. And we have to not just assess what a problem is. We now have to assess, is that problem worth this kid dying for, or this person dying for? So, you know, that's you know, something that, you know, it kind of is what it is. I mean, it's, in terms of Christian Cooper, I mean, look, God bless this guy. But I am not surprised that his reaction was such.
So docile, or whatever?
I don't even know that it's docile as much as I think he is acclimated to a life and a culture and a circle and a network of people that anything other than this sort of response
wouldn't be acceptable. It's some very all acceptable. Lives matter shit going on.
Yes, it definitely puts him, you know, I would assume that he's kind of had to, you know, be the black guy at the table when these discussions are occurring.
Yeah. Right.
And I feel like he is probably the black friend that gets recited in saying something that's not crazy, but crazy enough for us.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like he won't say some shit like, well, Trayvon shouldn't have been wearing the hoodie, but he's probably the guy that's like, hey, I understand George is out there. You know,
yeah,
he's kinda,
he shouldn't have resisted arrest.
Something like that. And I'm talking absolute shit. And I make a
all he had to do was say where he was going and nothing would have been another what happened.
And I'm making a complete assumption just based on his response here.
Yeah.
I do want to say, I do think we are getting into a territory that is, this is particularly a tightrope.
Yeah.
Because, you know, black folks are going to be on the other side of that.
Yeah, and have been. But now yes. I think that's the other thing, right? Like, somebody, and to your point, somebody did say, like, we talk about we want white people to mind their business all the time, and he wasn't necessarily minding his business. And I was like, that's fair. However, the irony is that if the roles had been reversed, based on what we've seen, if the roles had been reversed and it had been a white person having this conversation about leashing their dog with a black person, that white person still would have called 911 because the black person didn't leash their dog. You know what I mean? Like, it's that kind of shit. So
the white person wouldn't even have threaten to call.
They just would have called 911 like the dog's off the leash.
Absolutely.
So I do, there was definitely a little bit of turnabout as fair play, but for me, I didn't so much care about her losing her job. I definitely wanted that dog to be returned. I didn't care so much about her losing her job. I want to actually see anybody charged with filing a false report, because until there's that consequence, because this is a misdemeanor. It is a misdemeanor to knowingly call 911 with a false call, right?
Mm-hmm.
So until there is actual legal ramification for that, these people are going to continue to use 911 as their personal
as a weapon,
like, concierge service, yeah. as their universal manager to call because a black person or any person that you deem beneath you has the nerve to challenge your entitlement. So it's like, because that's all that is. That's, you're not doing what I want you to do, so I'm going to make somebody else
make you do what I want you to do.
What I want you to do, right?
Yeah, that's crazy, man. You got something to say, bro?
I mean, not really. I just think that I think it's a very slippery slope. I think it's a very slippery slope that we have to be careful on where we are. And I'm not saying this in defense of this woman at all. And I'm not saying this in any sort of way to, you know, I'm not crying for this woman. I'm sure she, from what it appears, she had a very well-paying job. You know, she was well into six figures, which I'm sure at financial institutions, this was not just simply her being fired, right? Like, I'm sure it was a negotiated
package.
There's a package. Like, this woman is, you know,
she'll be all right.
Yeah. Right? So that's not really the thing. And I'm sure she'll be able to get another gig. But my issue is, in doing this sort of stuff, we should probably recognize that we're also going to be on the receiving end of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So then that happened, what, 3 or 4 days ago? Maybe five. I don't think it was even five, actually.
I don't even think it was five. Yeah, like, I think it was over the weekend.
Yeah, and then 2 days, was it 2 days ago?
George happened the next day, I think. So if this happened on, I think this might have happened on Sunday, and George might have happened on Memorial Monday Day or Tuesday.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, so George Floyd, the Houston native, had moved to Minneapolis, Minnesota to get he was taking trucking classes to become a truck driver. You know, he had, you know, had a few issues in his life he was trying to figure out. But from what I read, by no stretch, like a bad guy. Just, you know, guy just had a couple bumps in the road, like millions of people have. He went, I don't know if it was a CVS, but it was some type of drugstore. And the owner of the drugstore thought he was passing a bad check. Now, I've heard mixed reports that some people say the check wasn't even bad. And called the cops.
Also, you don't call the cops on a bad check.
That's on a bad check. Yeah, you say,
put your shit back. That's apparently it left the store or something, but also that's what check systems is for. Like, yeah. There's a collection process for that.
Yeah. And I don't know how much a check was for, but I doubt it was for much money.
Nah, hold on a second. It depends. A bad check is one thing. A fraudulent check is another. And if it's a fraudulent check, you're going to be expected to call the police at that point.
Okay.
I'm not defending.
Yeah, not as, I'm not saying.
I'm just pointing out the difference.
Okay. So the police were called, and this video that has since surfaced of when the police were first called and, you know, kind of accosted George, and he wasn't putting up a fight. He's a big guy, so he's bigger than the cops. But he wasn't like fighting back or swinging or anything like that. He wasn't resisting arrest. But the cops just decided to turn it up to level 10, and put George down on the ground. And then what is the cop's name who murdered him?
Oh, I don't know. Derek
Chauvin or something like that puts his foot on George's neck. I mean, excuse me.
And it's just sitting there chilling.
Yes,
but his knee on his neck.
8 minutes, and George is saying, "I can't breathe," and like get up, and all the people around him are saying, "Get up, breathe." And he's just like leaning on George, like full weight with his knee into his neck, crushing his neck. Comes to find out that this cop has had several things filed against him for
unnecessary assault. Yeah, of course. He's also on social media with not even Make America Great Again, just Make White
Well,
Great
that,
Again.
People saying it is him, and people say that's not him on social media.
I don't know.
But he's had several complaints about police brutality, and apparently has murdered shot a couple other people and killed them as well. Him and his partner who's actually he's Asian, of Asian descent. I don't know which country he's from, but he's of Asian descent. So again, it doesn't even, you know, the whole thing about like white versus black is not really, you know, clear cut. Right. So it's awful. To be honest with you, I haven't watched the George Floyd video.
I'm not watching that video. I've gotten to the point where, I've not watched a video where anybody was killed in years. I still haven't watched the Eric Garner video. I know that I can't.
I don't blame you.
Do it. I can't. I haven't watched the Ahmaud Arbery video.
Yeah, like, I never watched that either.
I cannot watch black people being killed on camera. I can't. Yeah. And it's to the point where, like, I really can't even watch cops just fucking around with black people on camera. Yeah. It's too much because, like, you will be angry all the time. And we all already are angry and traumatized all the time. But, like, there has to be... First of all, the rapidness with which we share these videos, even amongst each other, it goes beyond awareness. We actually are perpetrating trauma, right? So, like, I understand we want to bear witness to it.
Yeah, but it's like, have you seen this?
Yeah,
like the fuck? No, I don't want to see that, bro. I don't want to see it.
I can't. Like, it's enough to know about it, right?
Yeah.
And it's enough to know what happened for me on video, and then if there's some dispute and I really have to watch it, like, maybe, but I'm not really trying to see another black person get killed on camera. Like, I'm not. And but with the one thing about the Ahmaud Arbery clip, I guess, and with what's happening in Minnesota, that's different, is that the officers involved were fired immediately.
The mayor of Minneapolis called for the AG up there to arrest them, at least arrest the guy that also killed them, and put him behind bars. And that's like, it doesn't need to be that he's fired and that's it.
Yeah, like, he, yeah, they actually need to be charged.
He committed murder. Like, it's on
tape. Right. They actually need to be charged. So that's different. But in the meantime, obviously, while waiting for this to take place, there have been protests and demonstrations. Well, I want to, I want to be careful with even the language we use, because they're not riots. They start as demonstrations and protests, and then they, because riots imply that people go out there with the intention of to tear up shit and cause chaos. They're going out there to demonstrate, right?
Yeah, they've been in Minneapolis and they've been in Los Angeles.
Right, but the police response has been that of rioters. Whereas, meanwhile, in Minneapolis, just a couple of weeks ago, all them white people was out there with all them fucking AR-15s and whatnot, chilling.
Michigan, a whole bunch of states.
Fucking chilling.
With rocket launches, right. Literally, rocket launches. Dudes in a rocket launch up in the subway ordering a sandwich, no problem.
But these people are out there in peaceful
protests. Unarmed, right. Like you said, and they're getting you know, rubber bullets shot at
like
them.
Like, tear gas. It's looking like Ferguson all over again. It's really scary to watch. It's really scary to watch.
You can't protest a black man being literally murdered, you know, on film.
You can't protest as a person of color.
Exactly.
Right? And it also is frustrating, and I'm on a tangent, but the thing is, like, if black people were to go out there armed to protest, they would come out, they would call the fucking National Guard out there and, like, spray the whole shit down with a tank.
Yep,
right?
Quickly.
But with white people, they know that there is a white resistance that will really launch up and try to overthrow the fucking government. Like, they're actually more scared of those white people than they are of us, I think
it goes even deeper than that. I think, you know, even they might not show it, like, a lot of these guys walking up with guns and shit like that, like, I think the cops know these people. Like,
well, they do. The cops fuck with them.
I think they're their friends. Yeah. They go to the same neighborhoods. They go to the same gun clubs. They hunt and fish together. So they're not going to go with them crazy because that's their people.
And the cops believe.
They believe exactly the same shit that the
people. They believe that this is the white man's country. They look at us as insurgents.
They're looking at them like, I understand why you're protesting. I'm with you too. I just gotta work right now. But otherwise, I'd be with you. Whereas actually on the other side, it's like, you know, us versus them. Like, no, we gotta keep these niggas and brown people and whoever else in line, no matter what. Even if what we did was wrong, fuck them. You know, what do you think, bro?
I'm exhausted. I mean, we have this conversation every quarter.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, you know, and I don't have much to add to the discourse at this point. I don't have a magic solution. I don't have, you know, a 10-step program that is going to solve all of these issues. And there are many of them here. I just don't. I mean, do I think that the cops being fired, I mean, they didn't really have much of a choice.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. They didn't have much of a choice. People that are speaking out against those cops are, again, I think those are very easy decisions to make because they've been fired. They are not employed. They are, you know, operating, you know, sort of, you know, alone. They're kind of on an island. So there's no one protecting them. I saw the video. I was bombarded with the video.
Yeah.
I'm recognizing that a lot of people use this as a time to make themselves feel a bit powerful, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
It's kind of turned inward to some degree. And there's an anger and there's a frustration and there's a hurt. You understand what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. but I don't have a solution and I don't see solutions being offered, I guess is what I'm saying. Right? Right. Like I just feel like people are just angry and they just want to say it and they want to post memes and they want to create memes and they want to get, you know, retweets and likes and levels of engagement. And I feel like a big part of this is that now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I do think that there's one thing to want a place where you can express it, because I am hyper aware, like even as in one of my group chats, you know, my friends are talking about how they had to cancel Zoom meetings today because they couldn't really fuck with these white people today, right? Like a friend of mine posted, my friend Kim Miles posted yesterday, like, he was like, it's crazy to me that there are white people in America who got up this morning, you know, had their coffee, hopped on their Zoom calls, did whatever they were doing
like,
all day.
Like went, nothing happened.
And went to bed with no thought of the fact that another black man had been murdered, right? Like that didn't cross your, that didn't have to cross your mind at all. Whereas if you were black, there's no way that didn't cross your mind
around
at some point.
It.
Like, so it's like, it. I do understand like needing an outlet. And I've recognized my privilege since Ferguson, since Trayvon, actually specifically, I've recognized my privilege in being in spaces work-wise, social media-wise, where I can really say whatever the fuck I want about this shit without fear of retaliation, losing my job, you know, somebody being like, we need you to take that down. Everybody doesn't have that privilege. Yeah. So I think that some people need the space, but you're right, Sean, there are a lot of people for whom, this is more about like let me just get some views or just not knowing what else to do. And I think that's the real problem is that it does feel like a very hopeless situation, or at least hopeless insofar as change that we can affect as the average people, because the problem is in systematic, is in systems and in like police unions, etc. It's so much bigger than us. It's like,
I would
how
love
do we
to see,
stop it?
I would definitely love to see one of the things that I would love to see is I would love to see municipalities basically begin to cap their payouts for these departments and start to have those payouts come from
police pensions. Because if that had to happen, we would have a lot less of this shit.
Yes.
I'm 100% sure.
Start snatching pensions, start doing shit like that, and it will change everything.
Yeah, because that's the union, and we've talked about this on here before, the power of the police unions is part of the problem. The fact that these cops, even a lot of times when they get fired, or they might get put on administrative leave. There was one case, which case was it? Where the officers got fired, but the investigation took so long that they got rehired, because it's a rule in the department that if the investigation takes longer than, I'm trying to remember what incident it was, but it was a rule in the department that if the investigation takes longer than 60 days, they have to be reinstated. But it's also a rule in the department that you can't start the investigation for 30, you can't talk to the police officer for 30 days or something crazy. Like it's structured
it's
so that,
all of, yes.
It's all structured so that the police officer keeps their job, right?
Yes.
So I think so there's that issue that's like, how do we overcome that? And this also goes back to the Amy Cooper thing, which is also like, we got to teach people, you don't call 911 for this shit. Like, you do not call 911 for just anything. Like, you really got, because there is like, it's the 911 calls, and then there's the police responsiveness. Like, those two things go hand in hand.
Yeah, I think that she definitely should be charged. I think until you start doing that, you're going to continue to get 911 calls for little black girls selling water, right?
Yeah.
Like, that is just, that's a ridiculous thing. But I also think that, you know, one of the things I wanted to mention is like, I'm actually exhausted too by a lot of niggas on social media when this happens.
Yep.
And you get on there and you start talking about this Malcolm and Martin shit, and you start talking about what we need to do, start picking up guns.
What we need to do is
and all of this shit from your computer. Okay, my nigga, like stop, like miss me with you acting like you fucking Huey and Bobby. My nigga.
Right.
All right. You're not going down to the state house, and that's perfectly fine. I don't, no one, that doesn't mean that you're docile. That doesn't mean that you are, frustrated. We also know how that story ends as well. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you want to take another way, that's perfectly fine. But all of this, all of this tough talk on
keyboard warriors.
And if I get killed by the cops, dude, burn this shit down. Like, nigga, I don't care about nobody burning that down. My fucking family is grieving, my nigga.
Exactly.
Right, right.
Fuck, I care about you in the street for me.
Yeah.
Right.
My fucking family got to put me in the ground, my nigga. For real. Yeah. Like, that's the part where it's very difficult for me, and I sort of check out of social media. And I try to have some levity. Like the other day, Mona hadn't seen anything. She was on calls.
Right.
And I had been kind of bombarded. Mm. And I kind of had to leave the room when she was, you know, catching up on everything.
Right, because like, you already been through it and processed it once.
I just was kind of like, yo, I can't. You know, I don't have, you know, and I get it. You know, it's like she thinks about me. She thinks about Justin. She thinks about, you know, but it's like I don't have an answer for you, right? Like, I don't have – that's the worst part of this feeling.
Yeah.
Is that you don't have an answer. There's no easy way to figure out how to solve this. There's no easy way to figure out how to survive this shit.
Yeah, yeah.
He did everything you were supposed to do to survive an interaction with the cops.
Everything.
Yeah. I mean, just to the, like a real quick side note, that your whole point about the keyboard warriors and all that, that's what got me so frustrated this week with the whole Jimmy Fallon thing. So there was a clip that went out of Jimmy Fallon who was on Saturday Night Live sketch 20 years ago.
Playing Chris Rock.
He played Chris Rock, so he had, you know, the makeup on to make his skin look dark and everything, and he had like an Afro wig on. And they were like, oh, cancel Jimmy Fallon. I'm like, first of all, this happened 20 years ago. It was on national television. It wasn't like some handy shit. Like, you niggas is just too young to stay up and watch the shit. I didn't see one time Chris Rock said he was mad about it.
No, like,
you niggas want to run with some shit that happened 20 years ago, like you're making a point or something. Like, you're making no point, B. Like, you was 4 years old. You missed
I'm happy to see that that went away really quickly.
It was stupid.
Because we got more important shit to deal with. But it's also kind of like the Tyra, America's Next Top Model thing a couple weeks ago, right? Like,
how was that clip? It was like the 90s, right, or some shit, right?
Or early aughts or some shit.
Yeah, it took 20 years ago.
So I did tweet this the other day. It's not, quote unquote, exposing somebody when you are pulling a clip from, like you said, a national TV show that for something that was done like out in the open when somebody was already famous, that's easily findable on the internet, that happened in the age of digital, just because you just paid attention.
Just because you found it, exactly.
Just because you found it. Like, and that is my issue. Like, there are so many things that come back up from people, like you said, from people who weren't of age at the time it happened. And there's sometimes where you can go back and re-examine something in the lens of, yo, this is so crazy, this shit would not fly today, right? Yeah, or let's talk about how this was problematic back, how this back then, now we can see that this was problematic. Mm-hmm. Like, I've talked about that, about John Hughes movies. I was like, there was a lot of shit happening in John Hughes movies that was problematic as fuck. But I've talked about it in that lens. Like, let's talk about how, from the way we view things now, that was problematic. To have it's always framed, though, when it's let's cancel whomever, whatever, it's always framed as though this shit happened yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, it's framed as if the shit just happened.
Like it's a gotcha moment.
Yeah, and people will be like, y'all knew better, you know, when it happened. No, like, social conversations were different. Social things were different. Like, we knew blackface as a term of mocking black people was wrong. But Jimmy Kimmel, who, by the way, has an almost blemish-free, history and fucking reputation. Like, he's one of the nicest white boys in the fucking world. It's like, this is not a gotcha moment. And Jimmy almost immediately apologized. This is more of a, wow, this aged horribly, fuck?
Yeah.
And then
niggas out here like, oh, he's canceled.
And then somebody brought up to me, somebody tagged me and it was like, oh, and you know Jimmy's best friends with Justin, because people have been talking about how they don't want Justin Timberlake in a Versus. I'm like, y'all need to really let all that shit go. Like, let it all go. It's got all, let's just let it go. Just let it go. Yeah.
So, what a horrible
thing. I have one more thing I want to bring up in terms of white women being white women, and this is the story I just discovered last night. So there's this white woman named Mika Strauf or something. I don't even feel like looking up her last name. Strokoff. Anyway, she's a mommy blogger who built a large part of her following around the fact that she was adopting a boy from China. Mm-hmm. And like, for a year before she went and got the kid, like, all her YouTube were like, China adoption update, international adoption update, new news about the China adoption, China, whatever. Gets the kid has, names the boy Huxley, which is a problem in and of itself. He has autism. And they knew that he had some kind of social delays and or developmental issues before they got him, before they went and got him. So since she adopted him, she's had him almost 3 years. Since she adopted him, they've had a bio son, which is their fourth biological child. They have two daughters, a son. Huxley was like the second son. So they have two boys, two girls. Now they have another son. And fans started noticing a few months ago that Huxley wasn't in the family posts as much anymore. So they were starting to ask her about him. She would block them. And her husband, after a couple of fans created accounts that were like Justice for Huxley or, you know, Where's Huxley? She and her husband finally did a video saying that basically they gave him to another family because they couldn't handle it. Yeah. And it's like, how do you
adopt your kid, get your following up, and then when he doesn't fit.
And my guess is like, with a new infant in the house, because they kept referencing like the past year and the baby's almost a year. My guess is like with a new infant in the house, it's kind of like they ain't have enough for Huxley and for the baby, which like I get it, but also at the same time, like this wasn't a foster. You adopted this kid. You brought him over from another country.
And then like, and pushed him off to somebody else.
What are you doing? And I'm just like, it's the most white woman shit. It's the most white mommy influencer, like the mommy to me, that mommy blogger,
for clicks and likes.
Yeah, you know? It's awful, and it's all curated, and it's all staged, and it just further got under my skin because, of course, the apology video is all like her and her husband. First of all, they're in matching like white tops, and you know, hair just perfectly tousled to make it look really casual, and the crying with no tears, and you know, it's just all whatever. I'm just over all of it.
Feel bad for us. Fuck Huxley.
Right. Poor Huxley.
Basically, you know. Mm-hmm. All right. What a dark week. Hopefully, I mean.
But fam, listen, we're gonna go to this versus battle on Sunday and get the word.
Yeah.
And have some fellowship.
Bro, they need to get Teddy on there.
Oh my God.
For Mary. Just read my word.
Yeah, yeah. Man.
That's Teddy what they back need. Playing drums.
Get Teddy and Warren and I'll tune in for that.
I'm also interested.
Name their group again?
The Soul Seekers.
Yeah, the Soul Seekers.
Oh, you know what we need to talk about next week that we didn't talk about? We need to talk about the copyright crackdowns on Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
And
we could probably do a Sean King tomorrow, next week, too.
Oh, yeah, we'll do Sean King.
Yeah, they got Sean King in the news again. It still don't make a difference, though, whatever.
So we're going to wrap it up on that note. We'll see y'all next week. Y'all stay safe out there.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.